2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.
Now, it's not just the weather that is hotting up this week, because things are really getting going in the World Snooker Championships, and I'm up to 90 over it. Okay, I'm actually not really. But it might get even hotter if the tournament moves to Saudi Arabia. And Shane Dawson from Game On joins me now to talk all about it. I don't know why you laughed, Ash.
I just know you're a massive snooker fan. You looking forward to the semi-finals today?
I cannot wait.
We'll be creeping him on Game On later.
Actually, this is really good to know, because all joking aside, my mother is one of the biggest snooker fanatics of all time.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, she absolutely loves it. So like, I would have grown up with it always being on the telly. So
okay, she's of the Alex Higgins, Ken Doherty era. So yeah,
Ken Doherty was like up there, one of her favourite people of all time.
The original darling of Dublin.
Yeah, so there you go. Now, the Snooker World Championships at the Crucible Theatre is a huge deal every single year on TV. Shane, is this going to be their last year?
No, okay. No, it won't. So it may move in the future, but it certainly won't be the last year. It's not the final edition. It's a heroic, iconic, really authentic venue. Small, retro, rustic, perhaps, if you're trying to paint
a nice
picture on it. It could do with a lick of paint, but no, who knows what the future will hold beyond 2027, but it will be there until 2027. So it'll be there. It's obviously there at the moment. It'll be there next year. And then 2027 marks the 50th anniversary. So it's a really special occasion, 50 years at the Crucible.
Okay.
But where it goes after, very much is up in the air, and it remains to be seen, which is unfortunate for snooker purists who have a strong connection to the venue.
Yeah, but like, why is this? Is this because snooker has outgrown the UK, or what's the story?
Yeah, somewhat. It's outgrown the venue, perhaps not outgrown the UK, but it's outgrown the venue. Like, it's less than 1,000 people, spectators.
Okay.
And it does have, and I know I'm saying rustic and it's beautiful, and it has that emotional connection to the Crucible, and that's the World Snooker Championship. It's been there for 48 years. But snooker is becoming more popular. It's becoming more... It's a global sport now, and it's not just played in the UK and Ireland. There's you even see this tournament with so many Chinese players, Luca Purcell from Belgium, Neil Robinson of Australia. So it is becoming a lot more... The participation rates are going up, and therefore people are wanting to go to the venue, see the tournaments. Now, they're worldwide tournaments as well. There isn't just tournaments in the UK. There are tournaments across Europe and in China as well that can hold a lot larger.
A lot.
So,
and like, I mean, let's be realistic. The larger venues that you have, the larger crowds, the more money that you make for the sport.
Which is what it boils down to as well in any modern sport across the board. Now, I don't think snooker helped themselves a lot by... the likes of, say, cricket or darts are kind of minority sports, for want of a better term. Now, I enjoy these sports. I would hate if someone called it minority sport, but lesser.
But on the grand scheme of things.
They need to be on free-to-air television as well. And to be fair with snooker, they're streamed, and there's a lot of Chinese companies coming in streaming these world tournaments as well. So they're a bit more accessible in that regard.
Okay.
But it's becoming more global, and you have to move with the times. And that mightn't be ideal for purists, and it's across even in football or any kind of bigger, more popular sports as well, that there is a drive for revenue, and there's a drive to increase the sport and to push it across the world. And if you stick with being in the Crucible for the World Snooker Championships for less than 1,000 people there, it's probably not going to be long term. It's probably not going to be great for the sport, unfortunately.
Last time you were with us, we were talking about footballers who were getting into their 30s and 40s who were still playing, and it was because they were moving to teams in Saudi Arabia that were paying them huge money, but we weren't necessarily seeing them in the Premier League or on like main television or out. But why is the Premier League able to be a global sport and still be based in the UK? But then you've got boxing and other sports, they just seem to be packing up and moving to Saudi altogether.
With the Premier League, and I think it's because it's a completely different sport, so you have to separate the two of them.
Okay.
You can't compare snooker and football in that regard of the Premier League is a centralised product that has history, and the stadiums even. We talk about the Crucible being one stadium, but there's 20 Premier League teams. There's a centralised system. There's one governing body where snooker or darts or boxing, even say, boxing particularly, it's a lot more fragmented. There's a lot more governing bodies. Yeah. Whereas you have one centralised league with teams, that are already at venues, Liverpool and Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester. People will travel to Old Trafford, to Anfield, to London, to Chelsea, to Arsenal, wherever it is, to go experience that culture. And that's what's been harnessed and that's what's been nurtured for football. Whereas if you just take a standalone event, one boxing match or one snooker competition as such, you could move that around and you can chase then the big payday for at the big venue. Now in Coppa Italia, Coppa del Rey, they've moved, say, Spanish or Italian matches to Saudi Arabia, or they've moved it further afield for standalone events or standalone matches, but you couldn't do that with a whole league for a whole football calendar. Okay. I think the NFL, I know, spread it around, but there's strong club identities with those international fans. So the whole package for an international fan travelling to that team is to experience the culture that you can see in Manchester or Liverpool or wherever. And that's just using the Premier League as an example.
Okay.
So it's completely different in that regard, although there are some outliers or some examples that, yes, they will chase that one-off standalone event.
Well, what about the fact that Saudi Arabia bought Newcastle United? Because they have been clever about the way that they've done that, have they?
Yeah, but I think that's been restricted. Of they can't come in, and that's to their public investment fund. So some may argue that there's a bit of separation there. Critics will obviously say there's completely not. They're both kind of singing off the same hymn sheet in that regard. They can't just come in and change the whole landscape because there's football fair play rules, there's financial restrictions on that. So when, for example, Roman Abramovich and kind of had the money coming from Russia, took over Chelsea, he was able, there weren't as many restrictions, so they were able to just go on and spend what they want and buy a league title, which is, I suppose, what will be leveled at Chelsea. Chelsea fans will say, no, they earned it, and they did. They had the best players, they won the matches or whatever. But Newcastle can be different, but it comes down to there's Newcastle fans that won't care. And it's not just a Newcastle thing. Of anyone that has money coming from Qatari states or from that part of the world, PSG, even in the Champions League semi-final when they had mass amount of riches, or Manchester City as well, the fans won't care. They just want the success and the glory. But then the people, and I'd say there's a Venn diagram of people that want the World Snooker Championship staying at the Crucible, and they want football to be pure and authentic and original, and they'll still want competitiveness, and they don't want to see all this money coming into the sport as a whole, regardless of where it's coming from. But Saudi Arabia in particular, then that opens up the whole issue of sports washing, which is a grander and larger issue at a team coming in to buy Newcastle, as opposed to just a very, very rich person or a very rich entity coming in and ruining the game in that regard.
We spoke about sports washing very briefly the last time, right? But Qatar were accused of sports washing in the World Cup in 2022. Have Saudi been accused of the same?
Yeah, absolutely have. Now, Saudi Arabia will say that they're investing in golf or snooker or boxing or particular football teams because they are just trying to move with the times, and it's a marketing aspect of what they or where they can put their money. Mm-hmm. But when you strip it all down, if you look at Saudi Arabia and the restrictions and human rights issues, restrictions on women, on the LGBTQ community, the everything that's gone on there, and if you're able to park that and watch Sandro Tonali ping a ball 40 yards or Isak score a goal to put you in a Premier League title race or whatever it is, Champions League football, that's up to you. If you're able to do that and you can still be happy with how you are supporting a team, that's completely, it's a personal choice. But I think there's a lot of people that will say, how can you abide by the calculated attempts to rebrand the country as modern and progressive when you're just not taking into account the reprehensible actions that have gone on and are still going on?
Well, that's it. They're still going on.
So it boils down to a personal choice. And a lot of people don't care or don't want to care, and they're blinkered because it's easier. It's easier to sit there and just watch a match on your telly and see all the best players, or watch a boxing bout in Saudi Arabia with two great fighters there. Mm. From the comfort of your telly, because you're not involved and you don't have to think about it. But if you strip it all back, and I think that's why excuse me, the media and everyone has a responsibility to report the truth and to be objective about it, but also to say, no, hold on a sec, this isn't just a marketing scheme. This is, it's sports washing, and that's what it boils down to. So,
well, let's talk about this, because like the World Cup is going to be coming in 2034. Mm. So you've mentioned it there about all of the concerns about human rights, LGBTQ plus rights. They've all been raised. Mm. And have they just been ignored by FIFA?
Yeah, well, I don't think FIFA or UEFA are the bastions of fairness and equality across the board. But look at Qatar. Mm. I mean, it was said somewhat at the start about, oh, you know, it's not great, but everyone got on with it. Everyone watched it. Migrant workers died. There was horrendous issues there going into the World Cup, and there's going to be horrendous issues going forward into a future World Cup. But do people care?
Yeah.
Like, well, you're going to sit there and, like, I'm not here pontificating. Like, I'm guilty. I watched the Qatar World Cup. It was a really enjoyable spectacle. Yeah. I enjoy watching football. You can't always watch something and then think about all of the aspects to it, because the world isn't perfect. But there are some horrific, horrific, horrible issues ongoing, and it's just brushed over the carpet. So FIFA, they'll say they'll implement X, Y, and Z to try and combat these things, but they won't. And I know, like, and that goes across the board. It's not just FIFA. And I'm not having to go, it's not just football. If the World Snooker Championships moves to Saudi Arabia,
well,
or moves to China, or wherever it may move to, it's across the board, golf, boxing, all sports, because sport is so widely watched and popular, and sport can bring people together. So it's a really easy route or avenue to go down for these countries to say, right, that can be the one little thing that can bring us together and bring us into popularity for the world.
Mm. A snooker, like, I mean, what is the appeal there for the likes of Saudi Arabia? Is it that the fact that it's quite a non-boozy sport these days? So does that make it just more appealing to their market?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, and it's a valid point. It isn't raucous. I know Alan Colley, who's over actually at the Crucible at the moment, and a big football fan, and he will say, you know, it's the greatest spectator sport that you will watch in the Crucible with 900 odd fans, because it's you're there and it's almost therapeutic. It's silence. You know, it is. It's like mindfulness. Yeah. But it's so tension filled. It's a completely different experience to watching a football match or watching whatever. But boxing would be a bit raucous. The crowds and the fans would be raucous, and that's survived in Saudi Arabia. So I think it's just, I think it's a good point, but it's not, you couldn't necessarily
attribute
it.
It's not necessarily what they're...
No, because it's just another sport. It's another popular sport, and it's growing. You can see that, as I said, it's becoming a lot more global, a lot more popular in general. So therefore, they're going to cling on to, if tiddlywinks became the next big thing, I'm sure they'd look at that. It's not just sport specific for the skills of snooker.
So Shane, what do you think is actually in it for all of these countries? Is it like what you mentioned, that it's this appeal that they look like they're very modern and very you know, like, open to absolutely everything? It's kind of nearly like, I mean, it is sports watching, so it's kind of like the smokescreen.
Yeah, it is. They can say we're simply diversifying, and it's another aspect for our economy to try and create revenue. It's a part of this 2030 plan and this vision for becoming more modern, and hosting sports is just normalizing international engagement.
Yeah.
So it's just, we're one of you. It's fine. We can host that tournament. You can host that tournament. But you can go beyond sport, then we can host this international event or this IMF funding or whatever it is. We can host this UN, like,
we can do it.
Regardless, it is. We're just one of you.
Yeah.
It's fine. But it's not. And they're not. It's completely different, because there aren't atrocities going on at the majority of those other countries.
Yeah. How sustainable is this really? Because if you look at the amount of investment that has been put into events like Formula One, MMA, horse racing, the list goes on and on and on. Tyson Fury earned £78 million for losing a fight in Saudi Arabia.
I think it is sustainable, because the riches over there is just, it's unfathomable. Like, and the money that a Cristiano Ronaldo or whoever, and I know we've spoken about that before from the just football specific, but it's ludicrous amounts of money. And I don't have the ledgers here of the Saudi Arabian PIF on me at the moment. But it is. And it's, you know, perhaps it can go on in that regard. But there are, I mean, I don't think LIV Golf has been overly successful. So there has been, I don't think horse racing has been overly successful there at the moment. So it's not across the board, everything is all rosy.
Yeah.
But for the moment and for the short term and for the foreseeable, there is money there to throw at these athletes. And that's a larger issue of the money in sport in general and football, and how that's, never mind sport washing and moving these tournaments to countries that have questionable human rights issues. The money in sport in general, I think a lot of people are becoming disenchanted with it, and that's, everyone can love the Premier League, but there's a certain cohort that are perhaps turning away from it for a vast amount of reasons, or VAR or whatever, and it's not becoming the authentic product that it was because there's too much money in it, and that can take the enjoyment away from it.
Massively. So, I mean, if you're losing a match and you're still getting 78 million, it's kind of ruining the game.
That's like, and I'm sure Tyson Fury or whoever will go into a fight wanting to win.
Yeah.
But at the back of your mind, you're also like,
I'm all right.
My payday is already for me showing up and going into the ring.
Yeah.
And is it going to be enjoyable if one team runs away with a competition because they're just pumped by a state? If they have the backing of that, there's no equal or level playing field. And yes, other teams will have to improve. It can't just be a case of there's one team that have really marketed themselves well. Others will have to step up to the mark. It can't just be, you can't just put a cap on it and say, this is your income, this is your income. Now, they have tried to do that somewhat with the financial regulations. There has to be a certain percentage of what you can spend is your income. Yeah. So you can't just pump in 100 billion and buy the league like in the past. That has been the case in the Premier League. So they are trying to make some restrictions, but the money in general in sport would put a lot of people off, because it's sickening in that regard, because it's taking the enjoyment of the spectacle away from it.
Shane Dawson, absolutely no doubt that we will be back here again in the future talking about this, because it is ongoing and we don't know where all of this is going to end up and if it is going to stop at any point. Shane Dawson, you can hear Shane and the rest of the Game On crew weekdays from 6 o'clock right here on 2FM. I said it at the beginning of the show today, I'm going to say it one more time for you today. You are now my favourite Game On presenter, okay?
I'm happy.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast,
sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.